Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The Chief Justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Court is a woman by the name of Margaret Marshall. In her groundbreaking gay marriage judgment, she wrote, "We are mindful that our decision marks a change in the history of our marriage law." Well, on that, no one will disagree. But just what that change will be and how it will be marked is now being argued right across the country. Here in Boston, members of the Massachusetts legislature are gathering in a constitutional convention today. Many of them, it seems, want to find a way to limit gay marriage, to make it something less inflammatory, like a civil union. Now, thousands of people are expected to gather at the State House as well today, people determined to make their views known to the lawmakers. Some insist that the law of this land must be changed to preserve the principle of marriage as that between a man and a woman. Others speak of this in terms of rights, civil rights, social rights, equality, and equal protection. So our question to you this hour, what would you tell the legislators? Should gay and lesbian couples be given marriage certificates? Should this issue be up to the judges to decide, or should it be left to politicians and to the people? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Lawrence Tribe is here with me in our Boston studio. He is a Harvard Law professor who is right in the thick of this debate, urging that gay marriage become the law of the land. He's writing briefs to the court and advising some of the politicians who will have to deal with this in the month ahead. Larry, it's good to have you here on the program.
It's great to be here.
Maggie Gallagher is also with us from a studio in New York. Ms. Gallagher is president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy and author of a book called The Abolition of Marriage, How We Destroy Lasting Love. Ms. Gallagher, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's have a first check-in, though, with WBUR reporter Audie Cornish. She is actually at this moment inside the State House. Now, Audie, I understand that the conference isn't actually supposed to start for another 4 hours or so. What's happening down there now?
Well, right now they've already started lining up people at the door to the public gallery. The area for the public only holds around 120 people. And in the past, when this issue has come up, people actually rush the door and there are one or two fist fights. So to prevent that, they've cordoned off the area. And right now there's maybe 80 people, early birds and devotees on both sides, who are wearing buttons that say things like honor thy father and mother or defend the Constitution. And they're just sort of calmly waiting in line. Meanwhile, there are easily another 50 or so people who are still canvassing the building and trying to talk to legislators to sway them on one side or another.
And you were there yesterday. There were hundreds of people there yesterday. You're expecting more today?
Definitely. There were hundreds of people yesterday, and more importantly, a lot of the people who were here had their children. A great many same-sex couples were here. There were literally 60 or 70 children campaigning outside the front door of many legislators. I think we're going to see more of that today.
Audie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
WBUR reporter Audie Cornish. Let's bring this subject down to the basics that we need to know to understand it. I'm going to start here in the studio with Larry Tribe. For all the gatherings of the people at the State House and for all the lobbying on various amendments, you're very clear in saying that nothing's really going to change the decision that in the middle of May, gay marriage will be legal in the state of Massachusetts.
That's right. The state Supreme Court left absolutely no doubt about the fact that on May 17th, which is coincidentally the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education to the day, it will no longer be legal in Massachusetts to discriminate against same-sex couples, and therefore they will be, if otherwise eligible, entitled to get marriage licenses. And nothing that the legislature can do can stop it. The legislature can put things in motion that might change it in November 2006, but they can't stop it in May 2004.
So some of the ideas that we've heard bounced around Beacon Hill about banning the issuance of all marriage certificates as of the middle of May, all these ideas that would somehow buy some time, nothing can really change the ruling that's come from the Massachusetts Supreme
Court. That's right. Those are like the efforts of the governors to stand in the schoolhouse door to stop segregation from being dismantled, and the U.S. Marshals had the last word there. And here, the Attorney General has made clear he will enforce the judgment of the court, and the court itself will issue, I'm sure, an injunction to prevent any of these obviously unconstitutional laws from interfering with its mandate.
Now, Maggie Gallagher, the events that are unfolding at State House here in Boston, though, are for the opponents of same-sex marriage something of a rallying point, a place where the different groups are gathering together to say, not only in Massachusetts but across the country, that this is wrong, that this is something you want to oppose.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure it takes a lot of chutzpah for someone who's not even a lawyer to disagree with such a eminent constitutional scholar. But as of today, the court has actually issued no injunctions. It's issued no court orders. It has not ordered the legislature to do anything. It has not ordered clerks to do. You can presume or assume that it will do so at the end of 6 months, but it hasn't yet said what it's going to do at the end of that period. So I think Larry's making an interpretation rather than stating a fact.
Let's settle that, because I think this is really key to understanding it. Why do you say, Maggie, that as of the middle of May, it's still not a given that gays will be allowed to marry in Massachusetts? What could change?
Because the court, for some reason that's not clear to me, unlike the court in Vermont, did not say exactly what it was going to do as a remedy to this law. And theoretically, there are a number of possibilities. And it has issued no specific order to anyone. It has not ordered marriage clerks to do anything. It has not ordered the legislature to do anything. It said it would stay its judgment for 180 days and give the legislature time to act. But it did not actually specify what the state legislature had to do.
Larry.
I think it's given every indication that that's what it would like it to do. But exactly this drama will play out is something that I think we'll have to see when the court actually takes the next step.
Okay, Maggie, let's hear from there here.
Maggie, I think Maggie is inventing questions where there are none. There are plenty of uncertainties here, more than enough so that we don't have to start making up new ones. The reason is that, unlike the Vermont court, which said it's all up to the legislature to figure out how to equalize this, the Massachusetts court said with no ifs, ands, or buts, as a self-executing matter, marriage in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts means and shall be redefined to mean, effective in 180 days. Can I finish my sentence? Marriage means the union of a man and a woman. There was no order that the court could have given because there's no one who's defined. Can I please finish? Do you mind?
I wasn't allowed to finish, but go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The point is, no one has yet defied the court, so there's no authority for the court to issue any order yet. Its judgment becomes effective on May 17th. And if anyone defies that judgment, I'm only saying that the court, unless it's to depart from over 200 years of precedent, will issue an order to enforce its ruling. Now, I suppose a meteor could strike, but I don't think there's any question
that's very likely, but let's just say there are other Harvard professors who would agree with my interpretation, and let's let the events unfold and get back to the issue of what's happening today.
Okay, so what does this moment mean for those people, yourself among them, Maggie, who are determined to see that gay marriage not go ahead? Is this a starting point for you?
I think what this is about is who in Massachusetts gets to decide what marriage is. It's not about a rallying point banning gay marriage. It's about, do four people whose training is, you know, who went to law school, get to decide what marriage is and what it means? And I think that Goodrich decision is a turning point. I don't know. Today is an effort of the people of the state of Massachusetts to have their voices be heard, and I think it's very significant. But what happened in Goodrich was a decision that I think was extremely arrogant in that these four judges are tinkering with our most basic social institution. I think it was very ignorant. You know, for somebody who spent the last 20 years studying marriage as a social institution, for these four judges to assert that government creates marriage is about the most ignorant statement that you could make about what marriage is and how the law helps sustain it. And finally, I think it was wholly indifferent to the damage that they may do to our most basic social institution for protecting children and the absence of any sense of risk, you know, in pursuit of what might be otherwise legitimate agendas about adult needs and about adult desires and about adult affirmations is, to me, the most striking part about the rhetoric of the advocates in this case.
Well, I guess I disagree pretty fundamentally. I think that it's important to recognize that the Massachusetts court did not arrogate to itself the power to define and create a new institution. What it said was that its judgment would have no effect at all on how various religions define marriage, churches, synagogues, mosques. They expressly left untouched the definition of marriage in federal law and in other states. What they did say was that as long as the civil law of Massachusetts provides by government edict for the issuance of marriage licenses to give the state's imprimatur to what these various institutions have created, as long as marriage has that civil dimension with all kinds of legal rights and responsibilities and also with a very important label, the M word, it is a violation of the Constitution of Massachusetts, which was put in place by the majority of the people of this state, and its promise of equality, arbitrarily to exclude from that civil status and all of the symbolic benefits it confers a whole class of our brothers and sisters and sons and daughters, a whole class of citizens, citizens who are allowed in this state to have children by artificial insemination and otherwise, citizens who are allowed to adopt and raise families, relegating their families and their children in particular to the status of having, quote, unmarried parents, unquote, is what the court said, exercising the traditional function of a court in interpreting the Constitution, violates principles of equality. So this court wasn't making up a new institution. It was interpreting a fundamental document about equality.
You can't change the definition.
I just I want a clarification here from Larry, and that is, can the court set aside all the issues that Maggie spoke about, the great social import of marriage, the religious weight that it carries? She talked about it as a foundation of society. Can the court say, actually, none of that matters when we're to rule on it as a matter of civic licensing? We've really got to strip it away.
They didn't really do that. What they said was that this civic license is more than like a fishing license. It matters a lot to people precisely because of all of the social freight that it carries. Just as the U.S. Supreme Court said in 1967 that even though Virginia defined marriage traditionally as a union of people of the same race, that definition had to be modified in order to have equality. The California Supreme Court, almost 20 years before that, at a time when it was almost unthinkable through most of this country for a black and a white to marry, said that even though it may bother some people, the fundamental right of equality cannot be disregarded when you're dealing precisely with an institution that is recognized in civil law, but that matters so fundamentally to people.
Maggie, I've got a little less than a minute for the break, but this issue of it being a right, how do you argue against that?
I have to respond to what Larry just said, which is you can't have it both ways. You can't legally redefine marriage and then claim that you're not changing the basic definition of marriage. You know, marriage has historically been about the ideal, particularly for child rearing. And both social science and common sense agree that when it comes to children, you know, children do best when they're raised by their own mother and father who are married. What we're doing with same-sex marriage is now your laws and your government are going to step in and say alternative family forms are just the same as marriage. They're not only just as good, they're just the same. Children don't necessarily need mothers and fathers. Two men, two women raising children are just the same. And there's nothing, it's only bigotry or animus that leads you to any opposite conclusion.
Connection
That's
listeners, I
got to
stop you there, Maggie.
A dramatic change in our culture of marriage.
We're coming to a break. Connection listeners, who gets to define marriage? Is this something where we need to take the lead of the judges? Is this something where the people need to be heard perhaps before the judges' rulings take effect? What's your opinion here? 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My guests this hour, Maggie Gallagher, president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. It's a pro-family think tank. She's joining us from NPR's New York studios. And Larry Tribe is here with me in our Boston studio as a professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School. And we're talking about the fact that at this hour, people are gathering at the State House in Massachusetts, where the legislators are to meet in constitutional conference and talk about what to do on the question of gay marriage. That's where we want you on the subject this hour. It's soon to become an issue, I guess, Larry Tribe, that's a lot bigger than Massachusetts. We've already heard from the president that he's taking a position on this. Does that mean that this becomes more of a national story than a Massachusetts story in very short order?
Well, it's a national story to the extent the president and his allies want to use what amounts to a wedge issue, I think, as a distraction from matters of war and peace and matters of the economy. But in fact, the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision does not have any automatic impact in any state other than Massachusetts, as the court itself pointed out.
Right.
Doesn't have any impact on the religious definition of marriage, doesn't have any impact on issues about adoption or on the definition of marriage in any other state. In fact, the U.S. Constitution might eventually be interpreted to mean that something like what Massachusetts has done is required as a matter of equality. But unless that holding is rendered, this decision is for Massachusetts only, and it really is a matter from a certain point of view of states' rights. That is, each state can define marriage for itself until and unless the federal constitution imposes a definition the way President Bush wants to. He wants to say that marriage in every state has to be a man and a woman, and in fact, the amendment he favors has some rather scary language about how even the legal incidence of marriage cannot be shared by same-sex couples, so that although
that's not
the proponents...
Correct.
I'm reading the text of it right in front of me. I can at least read.
It can't be ordered by courts. It's left to legislatures.
No, it just shall be construed to require. In any event, I don't want to get into a legal argument. The point is that a lot of the people who favor this, like Maggie, don't really like the idea that same-sex couples are used as a possible family form with children that they raise and so on. And the more they get the benefits and privileges that are like marriage, even if they don't have the label, the more people are upset by it and the more they say that it's a matter of choice. No court can ever find, as a matter of equality, that same-sex couples should share these benefits.
Okay, Maggie,
rights.
But you...
Yeah,
is it
Larry's
in your...
just making up my views. I don't do that to you, Larry. You really shouldn't do it to me. But what's the...
I wasn't saying a word about your views. I'm quoting...
Yes, you did. You said people like Maggie believe this, is what you said.
Okay, I was quoting you from earlier in the show.
Let me speak for myself here, but...
You're very good at that.
I think it's going... Thank you. So are you. Obviously, this is going to be a big national issue. It already is. It's already driving the one court doing this is Massachusetts. It's already driving a number of states. There were 38 states. I think it's now up to 40 states that are passing either state constitutional amendments or legislative DOMA laws to define marriage in their states explicitly, because they're trying to prevent courts in their states from having to accept gay marriages because a court in Massachusetts creates them. But it's also a larger issue. I really don't think that marriage is such a minor issue that we should describe it as being, it's just a wedge issue to distract from more important things. I really think, Larry, it's important enough to deserve a large national constitution, and that there's nothing scary about asking the people through. It's really hard to amend the Constitution. You got to have a lot of support through our democratic processes in the way the Constitution allows us to put this question before the American people and say, do you want courts to be tinkering with the definition of marriage, or would you like to define it, and get it off the table? So then we can move on to other issues. We don't have to deal with courts doing this to our most basic social institutions.
Oh, great questions. And let's hear from our listeners on this. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. First to San Diego, California. Bob's joining us. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what. This nation was formed on Christian values. Every year, it seems we're turning further and further away from these values. Marriage isn't a social institution. It's not it's a God institution, a biblical institution. And the courts have no business trying to redefine God's law. That's the bottom line.
Now, hang on a second, Bob. If I didn't believe in God, I could still get married. I could still go to City Hall and get a marriage certificate, a marriage license. I mean, at that level, it's something which exists a part of, as well as connected to religion, right?
Whether you believe in it or not, he's there, and the Bible simply states, and this has been the case for thousands of years, that a marriage is a union between a man and a woman, and there's no reason for us to try to bastardize that.
So we'd be better off than taking the licensing function away from the state, just letting the church marry people. Would you prefer it that way, Bob?
The licensing is just a formality of paperwork. It has nothing to do with marriage itself. It's okay, the state or your locality recognizes that you're getting married, but it has nothing to do with what marriage is. And a family unit needs a mother and a father. You cannot have the absence of one, and I come from that background,
right,
because, you know, divorced parents. The absence of one of those figures has negative ramifications. You know, these people want to go and say, well, you can have two mothers, it's going to be fine. It's
Hang on
not.
A second, Bob. What I would like to do, I'd like to hear Maggie on the point that you began with, on,
right,
and that is the importance of the role of the church here, Maggie.
Well, I think that faith communities play a very key role in sustaining marriage as a social institution. I don't think that it's solely a religious institution. I think it's a complex institution. It's a legal institution. It's a sexual union. It's a parenting union. It's an emotional union. It is in every religious tradition, and even to people who don't consider themselves that religious, the language of sacredness applies.
And if your church said, hey, I don't really care what the Constitution says, I don't care what the lawyers or the constitutional amendment says, my church is only going to allow the marriage between men and women. Is that
the danger for marriage is to create a fragmented public culture of marriage where there's a very large gap between the religious sensibilities of the people and the civil institution. I think that is a danger for marriage. But more fundamentally, marriage is, to describe it as a social institution is not to denigrate it or to deny its religious dimensions. Marriage is older than the United States. It's older than the Constitution. It is even older than the church. It exists in every known human society, and there aren't that many human universals. And it always has something to do with bringing the man and the woman who make the baby together to take care of each other and the baby too. Now, why? Does that mean we can't change it? No, I think it points to the reality that men and women, you know, are powerfully drawn to a sexual act that can create new life. And every society has to find a way to deal with that in a way that's not damaging to the men or the women or to the babies. The word for that is marriage. You change the meaning of that word. You know, the things that men and women have to do to give their children this protection of marriage are really hard.
So it's just about the
word. They won't.
Maggie, it's just about the word. Aspects of civil union, all those rights and benefits, all that, that's fine with you. It's the word marriage that we're quarreling over here.
I think that civil unions are a different matter than marriage, and I think they deserve their own debate.
Larry Tribe, is it just about the word? Is that?
No, well, I have to say a couple things in addition to whether it's just about the word, having heard Maggie now, and I think she makes a lot of good points. I think that she is described, when she talks about marriage, she's described what I would regard as my own marriage. Carolyn and I, this June, will have been married for 40 years. It has legal dimensions, sexual, parenting, emotional, social. What the constitutional debate is about is whether when the state puts its legal stamp on it, it can do that in a discriminatory way. Now, I'm not charging the people who are troubled by calling a civil union a marriage. I'm not charging them with bigotry. I'm simply saying that the withholding of that label is a way of symbolizing the proposition that these same-sex couples that get together, who are not drawn sexually to people of an opposite sex, are not fully equal citizens. There's something about their union that makes them, well, as Bob said in his call, they're not in accord with Christian values. Or, as Maggie has said explicitly, they're not really going to make an ideal family unit because if they try to raise children, it won't have mommy and daddy. It'll have these two people of the same sex. Now, in a state like Massachusetts, which allows people of the same sex to raise children, and I haven't heard here a suggestion that that should be repealed, in a state like Massachusetts, to say to these people, you can raise kids, we will give you these responsibilities, but we insist that you not get this marriage license, is a fundamental problem. It would be fine to say, and the SJC, our highest court, said it would be fine, for the state to simply say, as you suggested, Dick, that we'll go out of the business of giving marriage licenses. Let your church, let your synagogue, let your mosque decide whether you're married or not. We don't have to give it the M word for marriage or the C word for civil union. It's if we insist on creating two separate classes.
So let me bring Maggie back in here.
We have a problem.
Yeah.
Maggie, because
let me just say, Larry has just...
Let me ask you a question, if I can, because I want to try and keep this accessible for someone like me who's not quite as well schooled in it as you two. And that is that if Larry is saying the question comes down to whether or not his own marriage, heterosexual marriage, is threatened by sharing that word, marriage, that title, with gay couples. Is that a reasonable way of framing it in your mind?
I think it may be a little bit too accessible, but I'll answer it anyway. Simplistic is what I meant. I don't think Larry's marriage is going to be affected, but I think, you know, every 5 years we have a whole new generation arising to marriageable age, and all of them are going to be deeply affected by this new, what Larry really just affirmed. I mean, under the law and public culture will no longer be able to say that some family forms are better than others, even if it's true. You know, and I had a foretaste of what this will mean, I think. And, you know, shuttling back up from Washington on the plane, and there was this really nice college kid next to me, and we got to talking, and he asked me, well, you know, what I did, and said, well, why are you possibly against same-sex marriage? And I said to him, well, you know, I think children need a mother and father, don't you? And he said to me, no, not really. You know, children are resilient. Whatever adults do, they adjust. And his mother was divorced and his older brother had some problems, but that's just because he knew his dad. And then he didn't really know his dad well, so that was okay. And then I turned to him with my big gun. I said, well, what about you? Do you matter to your children? You know, and he followed that the whole train of thought that is leading to this family diversity, all family forms are equal. It's discrimination to prefer any to any others. By saying, you know, no. You know, basically, he told me if he abandoned his kids early enough, that kids would adjust to whatever the adults do. That has been the big message of the sexual revolution, of the family diversity movement. Adults have these awesome needs that the law, you know, we've got to rechange our laws and rewrite our social institutions and that rise to the level of constitutional issues. But, you know, kids, heck, they'll adjust.
Larry Tribe, quickly to you and then back to our calls.
I'm not at all believing that all families are equal. There are some dysfunctional families, terrible families, with men and women who are each abusive of the other and of their children. There are fake marriages in Hollywood and elsewhere. There are marriages that are Potemkin village marriages. But to say that any marriage between two deeply committed and loving men or two women is automatically, therefore, on a lower class than all of these other marriages, regardless of how good or bad they are in terms of parenting, I think is fundamentally to say that homosexuality is a miserable thing, and those who are homosexuals really deserve to be put in a second-class status.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Hingham, Massachusetts is next. Pam, you're with us.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Maggie. I'm so sorry, Maggie. I did miss your last comment, I think, to a young person who was describing his family unit. I'm a married mother with two young children, and I just think there need to be more families with loving parents, whether it's one single parent or a gay couple. I just think that's the kind of environment we need to be raising our children in. And the only damage that can be done to children of gay families is when our society at large restricts their happiness or denies them their full civil rights. And that's all I have to say.
So part of this, again, that shows this is a debate about whether, I didn't claim that all families are equal, but whether a particular family form can be preferred. If we can say, as our ideal, it's that the man and the woman who make the baby are supposed to stay together and take care of what they created in a loving marriage. And that what we know is when this doesn't happen, that I was an unwed mother for 10 years. You know, I've interviewed lots of unwed mothers
and
single mothers.
And I'm also a child of a divorced couple.
Yeah, and I have never yet met one yet. Maybe one coming soon who, if you ask them what they want for their child, doesn't prefer that their child grows up and gets married and has children within marriage. And that is affirmed. That common sense is affirmed now by an enormous amount of social science evidence.
You know,
the rates of domestic violence, of child abuse, of poverty, of welfare dependency, of mental illness, of suicide, of substance abuse, of high rates of promiscuity and sexually transmitted diseases. All of these things, but, you know, not a dozen banal, but thousands of research studies have affirmed that all things being equal, children really are better off with a married mother and father.
There are two very basic points to make. One, we don't have time here for me to parade the social science studies the other way. You just heard an assertion. Number two, I don't think that there should be any limit on the power of the society and of the state if it's persuaded by Maggie's views, or by the views of what she says these studies show, to encourage people, to tell people, you know, it's better to do X than Y. But it's one thing for the state to say, we think that the better families are the ones that look like this, which I think is already a problem. That's one thing, but it's quite another thing to say that therefore we're going to make you wear a scarlet C instead of and have the normal M when you don't conform to our ideal. We're going to put you in a second-class status by labeling your union less than a marriage. You can have.
Well, it's different than a marriage. It's your interpretation that it's less.
Could I please finish, Maggie? You've talked a great deal. I just want to make a simple point. The idea that there is an ideal form of life and that the state, beyond pronouncing that it thinks that's ideal, can then begin to classify its citizens in terms of that ideal and to say that these families are going to be separate but equal, I think that reminds us powerfully, as the state's highest court said, that in our society, separate but equal is an illusion.
I think that the marriage idea is so important in the way that I view it, and I don't think I could convince Larry of this.
Can I ask you, though, Maggie, to go back to something that Larry mentioned earlier, and that was referencing the Virginia case where the court said interracial marriage. What do you think of that one as a precedent?
I was actually just going to answer that question. I really think it's so important to the broader health and this continuation of society that it is, A, not in the interests of gays and lesbians to win this change, you know, assuming that they're like me, they care about the future of America. And B, I think it would survive strict scrutiny in the way that I understand it. But which is to a shorthand way of saying there's a fundamental difference, you know. Marriage laws are neither invidious nor arbitrary. I mean, we didn't make up marriage as a way of stigmatizing homosexuality. By contrast, anti-miscegenation laws had nothing to do with the basic purposes of marriage. They were about keeping two races separate so that one race could oppress the other. There are no sexual orientation tests for marriage. Gays and lesbians can choose marriage. Many of them think that it's not the right institution in the way that it's set up now for them, and I certainly respect that. But, you know, having people of two different races, which, by the way, I mean, that's what my child has. I'm in an interracial marriage. It's just not the same thing as being fatherless or motherless. So when you take two things that are different and you make the law declare that they're just the same, you're doing violence to both of those sets of relationships.
And yet this country seems to be moving to a very fundamental constitutional conversation about whether or not marriage needs to be adjusted in a constitutional amendment. The history of constitutional law, wrote Margaret Marshall, is the story of the extension of constitutional rights and protections to people once ignored or excluded. Do you agree with that premise? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour we're talking about gay marriage, the debate over where that should be settled, whether or not it should be in the courts, whether or not it should be in a constitutional amendment with people voting, politicians deciding. We'd like to hear from you. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Larry Tribe is here with me in our Boston studio. He is a professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School and submitted an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief, urging the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court to reject calls for a civil union. He's been consulted by members of the Massachusetts legislature and, in fact, some of the national candidates on the issue of same-sex marriage. Maggie Gallagher is with us in our NPR New York studio. She's author of a book called The Abolition of Marriage, How We Destroy Lasting Love. She's also president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. 1-800-423-8255. But just before we go back to our callers, I'm actually learning a little bit about this by going back to 1967 and the Virginia case when the Supreme Court swept aside a ban on interracial marriages at that time. Maggie spoke about that a couple of minutes ago, Larry Tribe, and it's actually quoted in the Marshall writing where the Massachusetts chief judge writes, or quotes, restricting the freedom to marry solely because of racial classification violates the central meaning of the Equal Protection Clause. Is it your position that this is every bit as much a question of the Equal Protection Clause?
I think it is, although I think that there's nothing that's quite as bad as racial subordination and discrimination. But I would challenge the idea that this is about the standard, traditional, plain vanilla idea that marriage, of course, involves a man and a woman, and there's nothing discriminatory about that, whereas the old laws about not being able to marry across racial lines were about nothing but race discrimination. If you look back at the way those laws were defended, it's striking how the defense is identical to what we've heard.
What were they saying then?
They were saying that marriage is an institution created by God, that if God had wanted people to marry across racial lines, he wouldn't have created different races, that one of the fundamental purposes of marriage is to propagate the race, not to dilute it or homogenize it, and that that fundamental purpose is violated when children are brought into being by interracial couples, and that those children are never going to have as good a home because however loving their parents are, there will be plenty of discrimination in the society at large, and it's not in the best interest of the child. All of those arguments, family-centered, child-centered, humane, and focused on the spiritual meaning of marriage, all of them were made in the fundamental decision the Supreme Court made, and it wasn't popular at the time, and even less popular when the California Supreme Court did it 20 years earlier, was, be that as it may, there is a fundamental problem when we are committed to equality, a fundamental problem about labeling people and excluding them from an institution that matters so much. And if those cases were about ending white supremacy, then these cases are about ending heterosexual supremacy, and saying that all are equal in the eyes of the law.
Maggie, to you, and then back to our calls.
I think there's a fundamental, you see, what Loving v. Virginia, what the defenders of anti-miscegenation were saying explicitly is that it could be a public goal to propagate separate races. And what we're saying here is that propagation has nothing integral at all to do with marriage. That this whole great historic function that it has of making the next generation and trying at least, you know, telling adults that they have an obligation to try to get them the ideal, whether or not they succeed. All of these purposes are now going to be thrown out of the window in view of the idea that affirming the equal legitimacy of homosexuality, you know, which I think, you know, we really have the tail wagging the dog here. We have a society where 25 million children are going to sleep in fatherless homes. It has nothing to do with gays and lesbians, but it has everything to do with how committed we are to this proposition that children need mothers and fathers and that marriage has something to do with getting them.
The children who can't go to sleep.
If saying that amounts to affirming heterosexuality as important, then I guess I'm going to have to be guilty as charged. But you see, the
let's
flip
just hear from Larry
side
for a minute
if
here,
that's
Maggie.
Just like racism,
there's only an hour here.
Hour,
and I think it'd be nice to hear a different view.
Go ahead, Meg. Or go ahead, Larry. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm thinking not about the kids who go to bed without a father. I'm thinking about the kids who can't go to sleep at all because the parents who come home are going to beat them up. I'm thinking about the families that would be much worse off if we denied them the label of marriage. But it seems to me the most fundamental point is that to equate this with a debate about parenting is to forget that there are elderly couples who get married, there are infertile couples who get married, there are same-sex couples who don't get married but raise children in Massachusetts. I think it's a complete change of subject to say that it's permissible to deny same-sex couples marriage because in some instances, the ideal family would be a man and a woman. I mean, it seems to me that nothing follows from that other than that it's convenient to do things as we've been doing them for a long time.
1-800-423-8255. To Bedford, Massachusetts. Randy, you're with us. Randy, go ahead.
Yes, I was born in the 1980s. I guess you could sort of call me one of the first children of the post-sexual revolution America. And I grew up in a home with only a mother. And in my experience, I found that as I was a young child, I thought that it really didn't make any difference, sort of like the college student that the lady on your program was talking about.
Yeah.
But over time, I've come to realize that it's made a huge difference in my life to have only known one of my two parents, and that I think it's essential for the growth of a child to have both a mother and a father. And I don't really know the answer to this larger question, but I can say from personal experience it makes a huge difference.
Do you think that it would, that if marriage, the word marriage, Randy, only allowed men and women to marry, that it would have made a difference in your case?
I really don't know the answer to that question. I just know that heterosexual marriage is something that I think is very important, and we should take it very seriously when we start questioning, you know, a union between a man and a woman is in fact no better than a union between a man and a man or a woman and a woman.
So if it were ever to come to a vote, Randy, and you had the option of saying marriage could apply to same-sex couples or heterosexual couples, or marriage was only between for men and women, would you choose the latter?
Well, today, if it came to a vote, I would have to choose that it's only between a man and a woman, but that's based on my personal experience.
And Larry Tribe, the numbers favor Randy. The polls that I see favor Maggie and Randy's point of view 2-1. I mean, if this does become the sort of national thing that people get to weigh in on, that's what's going to happen here.
Well, nationally, the polls do show that at the moment. In Massachusetts, perhaps because people have been forced to focus on it a little more, maybe for other reasons, maybe because it's the Republic of Massachusetts and people think it's somehow different, the polls that I've seen show a slight edge in favor of allowing same-sex couples to marry. In Randy's case, I think one of the propositions is that his own life wouldn't have been better off, his life with only a mother, if the world had said that only a man and a woman can marry. The fact is that this is not pushing anyone into same-sex marriage. It's not as though heterosexual marriage is going to go out of style because suddenly people of the same sex can marry. That's why it seems to me very hard to understand, apart from the rhetoric, how it is that this very important institution, which overwhelmingly is going to remain an institution of men and women because the percentage of people who are gay or lesbian is very small, how it's going to be threatened, how it's going to be undermined, how its social functions in helping bring up the next generation are going to be eroded
if we simply allow this added option. This is what Maggie's been saying. And Maggie, give it to us directly in terms of how you think a change would then threaten generations of young men and young women to come.
I think that the law and the government will be committed to the proposition that all different family forms are equal, and that saying children need mothers and fathers will become a private idea that you can't say in public without being accused of being bigoted against other marriages. I think that's a real consequence. It's not going to affect, if I thought it was just going to affect, you know, the handful of children who are in same-sex unions and not affect the culture of marriage in general, I just wouldn't be involved in this issue. But I don't think it's true, and I think we should face up to the bigness, of this transformation. I'd also like to point out in the latest polls, at least two polls now show that around 55% of Massachusetts people now say they're against same-sex marriage. So there's a lot of shift in public opinion. It's very fluid, and it's still forming.
1-800-423-8255. To Roslindale, Massachusetts now. Jeff's with us. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi. I had a point. I've been finding that the pro-ban side of the argument, as restated today by Ms. Gallagher, has been more than a little disingenuous in the way that they've been implying that marriage has had a static meaning through the ages and the various cultures that it's been in. It wasn't even a recognized sacrament for the first couple hundred years of the early Christian church. And people talk about the word marriage being important. I think it's illustrative to note that the word actually comes from a Latin word meaning belonging to a man. And it wasn't just used to describe the bonding of a wife with a man, but also a slave or a servant with a man. And that's why we say a woman is given in marriage. Nowadays, the idea of such an unequal relationship is anathema to us.
You're saying the change is then inevitable, Jeff?
I'm saying that our concept of what it means, a marriage means, has changed over the years. It continues to evolve. And so it's a specious argument to say, well, we can't change the meaning. You know, to change the meaning is somehow goes against all this years of culture and history, because it's been constantly changing. Marriage today in our culture is a much more equal institution than it was even just 100 years ago.
All right.
Women in the United States didn't have, you know.
Jeff, I need to stop you there and let my guests in. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Maggie, you're up first on this one.
If you heard me saying that marriage is exactly the same everywhere and never changes, then I apologize. I don't mean that. Marriage is not only does marriage change over time within a culture, but different cultures have often really very different marriage traditions. What unites them, you know, if you go look at a book called Human Universals, I think it's Don Brown. You know, you have to ask yourself, why is it that despite all these differences in their changes, in every known human society, it still has something to do with bringing the mothers and fathers together into a unit where they have public recognized rights and responsibilities to each other? And I think it has to do with the big brute fact that one of the really big brute differences between same-sex and opposite-sex relationships is that sex between men and women makes babies. And we need an institution that tries to help channel this procreative function into in a way that's not damaging to men and women and is the healthiest thing for their babies. And if marriage doesn't have that meaning, we don't have that institution anymore.
Well, I have news for Maggie. Sex between men and women does not always make babies. And marriage is not only about baby making. And it's not true that every society does it that way. Just as a matter of sheer law, Ontario, British Columbia, the Netherlands, I suppose those countries and those places which allow now same-sex marriage are going to have societies that crumble and whose culture disintegrates. I think Jeff made a very good point that marriage in its social origins and in its linguistic origins really had a lot to do with male supremacy and belonging to a man. I think that the deepest source of the opposition to same-sex marriage is that when we no longer have a rule that there must be a gender-differentiated role in marriage, one man and one woman, each to perform a separate function, that the way that might threaten all marriages is that it underscores the move toward the egalitarian vision of men and women in marriage, not as a woman being given in marriage to a man. I think that is what deeply threatens a great many people who think in public that it's not okay to affirm male supremacy, but for whom the marriage institution would crumble if it were so equalized that it could be a man and a man or a woman and a woman.
My understanding of the word marry is that it actually means to blend, and it has the implication of you can marry herbs, different herbs, into a harmonious whole. But that aside, the difference between, to go back to this issue of infertile and old couples, every man and woman who marries, regardless of whether they will or intend to or even want children, can give any child they create or adopt a mother and a father, and no same-sex couple can do this. It's really an apples and oranges difference.
Except that a same-sex couple can adopt a child.
They can't give any child they create or adopt a mother and a father, whereas every man and woman who does that. So they don't contradict this
basic
meaning.
But saying they're not married
meaning.
Doesn't change that. That is, if you don't like the idea that they're incapable of giving a mother and a father, it's not going to solve that problem to insist on classifying them as not married. The only solution to that problem is to go much further than I've heard you arguing we should go, and that is to deny these children who need loving parents the possibility of being adopted by a same-sex couple.
This is the first of many conversations we'll have on this. I'm afraid we're out of time for it in this hour. Larry Tribe, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Dick.
Larry Tribe is professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School. Maggie Gallagher, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Maggie is president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. Earlier in the program, we heard from WBUR's Audie Cornish. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.